Her account of helping rescue people from a volcanic explosion baffled her, and her shock at seeing the event played out on television was apparent. By coincidence, I happened to have a book which told the whole story of the eruption. To hear Pat's description along with those from other eyewitness survivors and see their shocking similarities, it's hard to escape any other explanation than that she was there. Pat was eager to share her story. She felt it was important. She even submitted a report to MUFON. She often wonders what happened to all those people who she saw being rescued. She doesn't understand why she has these experiences, which she feels are generally positive. Like most people who have had onboard UFO experiences, she has many unanswered questions. Pat's case does show that in at least some instances, ETs do apparently intervene in natural disasters, and are interested in helping humanity. Cases of UFOs rescuing humans in a variety of ways are fairly numerous. Cases involving the rescue of thousands of people are not. In that regard, Pat's case is unusual, but otherwise, fits well into the pattern of contact in other cases. Pat's incredible psychic abilities also seem to be connected to all of this. As we have seen, many of the people who have extensive encounters seem to fit this pattern. I suspect that the gift the ETs refer to is her psychic ability, as this sort of thing has appeared in other cases. Ramon, Chapter 3, The Experiment, has one of the more unusual and extensive cases in the book. We spent many hours talking trying to sort it all out. During our interviews, he would often become emotional as he described the strange events that had happened to him. I could see that it has not always been easy for him. He has spent his life looking for answers. Thankfully, he has the support of a large family. He has worked hard to understand his experiences, and has connected with many prominent researchers. He has never been shy about speaking. He has submitted reports on his experience to UFO websites, and even agreed to a couple of appearances on the radio. Like most witnesses in this book, Ramon's experiences began in childhood. Being abducted from a government housing complex at age 6 appears to be the beginning of a secret UFO and perhaps a government mind control project that would affect his entire life. Ramon's experiences in the military raise all kinds of questions. Is our military compromised by reptilian humanoid ETs? Why was he taken to meet them on numerous occasions? Will his encounters ever end? He worries about his children, and his grandchildren, and will they have contact? These and other questions remain unanswered. Ultimately, he does not feel like the UFOs he's in contact with are friendly. While there may be friendly ones, he doesn't get a good feeling. As a Christian, he believes some of them might be demonic. Whatever the explanation, he is not looking forward to any new encounters. His case is, to me, among the most disturbing in the book. The idea of reptilians working with our government conducting a mind control experiment on an innocent teenage Marine is more than concerning. After his son saw a UFO hovering overhead while Ramon and I were doing a phone interview, he became protective about my safety. He was worried that by associating with him, I might attract the UFOs to me. Such things had happened before, but I assured him that I wasn't going to stop investigating. It was somewhat intriguing to wonder, was the UFO listening in on the interview? It was a curious coincidence at least. I'm not sure what to make of the overtly religious elements of Ramon's account. I do know Ramon to be an honest man, somebody who has worked hard to help the disadvantaged. For many years, he worked as a labor union organizer, and was able to more than double the wages earned by the Latino workers in the factories where he worked. Ramon is not the first experiencer to see religious figures aboard UFOs. I am aware of a good number of other UFO accounts involving religious figures including Jesus, Mary and others, such as Michael. Still, I can't help but wonder what role, if any, Ramon's own religious beliefs have played in shaping his experience, and what his experiences might reveal about UFO origins. Kim Cameron's case, Chapter 4, marked by the Greys, is in many ways, a typical abduction by grey aliens, and one of the most common types of onboard accounts I have researched. For that reason alone, I thought it was important to include. However, it does have some remarkable features. Kim has a twin brother, Kevin, who also had a profound UFO encounter with praying mantis type ETs. See my book, Inside UFOs, could this be the reason for his contact? There does seem to be a high incidence of twins in contactee accounts. Kim's military background also provides an unusual perspective. The fact that a retired Air Force officer who worked with special services was abducted by Greys and had a triangle scratched on his arm must mean something. With a sense of humor and no apparent ill will, Kim describes what it's like to be abducted and marked by Greys. He doesn't feel that the experience was particularly violating or negative. Nor did he get much benefit from it other than the sure knowledge that such things really do happen. It is also interesting that when Kim sought medical treatment, the military doctor showed little surprise. It makes one wonder, how many other cases are there? Sadly, Kim Kamen died of heart issues in February 2019. Lynette, Chapter 5, Lynette's Monsters, had connected with a number of researchers, including both Bud Hopkins and John Mack, before reaching out to me. I was delighted when she agreed to an interview. She was nervous, she said, because talking about them often precipitated another visit. And as we spoke, her fear and discomfort with the subject became apparent as she avoided having to recall certain memories or speak about events. Her experiences were unpleasant for her. Despite being fully conscious during many of them, or perhaps because of it, they caused her great fear. Nor did she like the fact that her children were involved. During our interview, she often began crying and had to stop and collect herself. She just wanted her encounters to stop. She was tired of them, she explained. And yet, Lynette has been able to obtain considerable information from the ETs. They often provided her with spiritual information and healed her on two occasions. She does not think they're evil. But nor does she like being bossed around by them. Ultimately, however, she feels violated and used. Her health has suffered, and she's unhappy about the lack of control involved with the experience. The case involving Paul, Chapter 6, Where is Paul? Is perhaps one of the most mysterious in this book, and the only one I've personally investigated, though I know of others, in which a witness was never returned. I am convinced of the sincerity and the veracity of the account, which came from a friend of my sister's. She met him at the Renaissance Fair, and I became friends with him prior to his discovering I was a UFO and paranormal investigator. When he found out, he couldn't have been more delighted and excited to tell me about what happened to his friend Paul. It's not something he could openly discuss with other people. Unfortunately, due to the nature of the case, and the fact that the main witness was never returned, it remains at best a brief glimpse into what actually happened. I'd like to think that Paul is still somewhere in space or upon another planet. There are a good number of other cases in the UFO literature involve people who have been abducted and not returned, but statistically, it's extremely rare. However, there are a lot of missing people in the world, and one can only wonder if cases like Paul's might provide an explanation. The case of James Santiago, Chapter 7, The Flying Saucer in the Atlantean Bracelet, is one of the strangest in this book. His account of a UFO in the Atlantean Bracelet is surely unique. And yet, the many other details he describes testify to the authenticity of his encounter. The incredible feeling of increased awareness is one I've heard from other witnesses. Another familiar description was the odd pressure being exerted down upon them in the car. James was local to my area, and we became very good friends up until his death by prostate cancer. He was hilariously witty, a talented singer and an incredible artist. We discussed his encounter many times, and he never ceased to get a look of amazement in his eyes as he described it. James had a lot of other psychic experiences, and as I interviewed him, he seemed genuinely surprised to see how many of them involved UFOs. He had always thought of his encounter in the Canadian Rockies as an isolated event. After our interviews, he realized he fit the pattern of a typical experiencer, with experiences from early childhood and onward. While he has no memory of being taken on board a UFO, he does have all the markers, including early childhood humanoid sightings, strange marks on his body, close-up UFO sightings, missing time, dreams of UFOs and more. His case reveals a curious feature of the UFO phenomenon, which is the tendency to target one person and subject them to a series of visitations. The Atlantean bracelet, James insists, was absolutely real, very heavy and indescribably beautiful. While he cannot vouch for its origin, he says that the artifact was clearly priceless. Whether it actually had the power to drive UFOs away, James can't say. However, he learned the hard way not to doubt Cleo. I Met Teresa, Chapter 8, examined by extraterrestrials, while going to visit a medium by the name of Brian Hurst. It turned out that we both lived in the area and were interested in mediums. We began talking, and when she learned I was a UFO investigator, she casually mentioned that she had been on board a UFO. After a little persuading, she agreed to an interview. Her experiences had occurred years earlier, and by the time of our interviews, had stopped. She had long ago accepted their validity and moved on with her life. Still, as she related parts of her encounter, her voice shook, and she shuddered a few times. An extremely kind and nurturing person, Teresa was eager to help me understand what her experiences were like. But like many witnesses, she seemed a bit bewildered by it all. She happily provided what information she could, but any real answers of the meaning behind her experiences seemed to elude her. Her experiences were unpleasant, and like other abductees, she learned some measure of control in stopping the experience by exerting her own willpower. I still wonder about our chance meeting. How common is the abduction phenomenon? Likely, Teresa's case is just one of many more just like it. Joe, Chapter 9, The Bugman in the Spaceship House, is the kind of guy you like the second you meet. He is warm, friendly, and gentle, while still being energetic and enthusiastic. He is an extremely talented artist. Unlike many artists who sketch outlines, Joe often starts at one corner or spot on the page and works his way across, creating a finished masterpiece. He has drawn or painted many of his experiences. Art remains his primary passion. The UFOs and the paranormal is something he has learned to live with. People have told him that they envy his many encounters. He suspects they would reconsider if they were in his shoes. Dealing with his UFO memories hasn't been easy. Joe admits that UFOs have had a huge impact on his life. He has always been eager to tell people. Now, what exactly is the intelligence behind the phenomenon remains an open question. As Ron related his experiences about being taken on board a craft and meeting friendly human-looking ETs, Chapter 10, 3 hours on board a UFO, I was struck by his enthusiasm. It was clearly an event which had a huge impact on his life. Years later, he did officially report his sighting to a few UFO organizations. Like many witnesses, he recognizes the profundity of the event and the importance of having it recorded for posterity. The fact that he had other sightings afterward shows that it was not an isolated incident. Still, the childhood incident remains the most profound. Like Ramon, Ron's experiences involve religious elements. Both have a strong faith and maintain that UFOs and religion are inextricably connected. Andy, Chapter 11, Andy's abduction, fits the profile of a typical abductee. He's a highly intelligent, quiet guy, sensitive and utterly baffled by the evil in the world. Like many other witnesses in this book, he has a special and strong connection with animals. He attributes the suicide of his brother at least in part to their shared experience. Despite this, he feels strongly that the ETs are benevolent. Like some of the other witnesses, his onboard encounter played an influential role in his life. It remains a very memorable event, one that he often thinks about. Dolly, Chapter 12. The UFO Guardians contacted me after hearing me on a radio show. As we corresponded, I became increasingly impressed. She was an advanced martial artist. She was extremely knowledgeable in various fields of science. She had all kinds of psychic experiences. And of course, UFOs were following her around. She's come away from her experiences with a positive perspective. She still has questions, but she also knows that she has been guided many times, even to the point of her life being saved. Dolly has an unusual affinity with animals, and has worked for many years to improve the lives of a wide variety of species. She's a powerful person with a strong sense of right and wrong. She takes no crap from anyone. She's also incredibly sweet. She took lots of time to describe her experiences in detail. At the same time, she admitted that for her, UFO experiences have become so normal that she doesn't pay special attention to them. There have simply been too many. She shared some of her more memorable encounters, but says that there have definitely been others. Tim, Chapter 13, How to Fly a UFO, was a delight to interview, and described his experiences with a great memory and attention to detail. UFO experiences are often so impressive that witnesses remember them with unusual clarity. Like many witnesses, he had a long pathway to figuring out what was happening to him. And like many witnesses, he is accomplished in a number of different disciplines and areas, and works hard to improve the lives of others. His experiences contain some features that are often seen, such as missing time, screen memories, unusual marks on his body, and others that are perhaps unique, such as the UFO waiting room where he was able to float around freely. His description of being inside the UFO control room is, as we have seen, fairly common. Anne's experiences, Chapter 14, Anne's communion, were very numerous and took place over her entire lifetime. There were so many of them that I had to do several follow-up interviews to get the events straight. She admitted that even she was unsure of some of the dates and orders of what happened. She remained in denial for so many years. Reversing the process and trying to remember them wasn't always easy. Many of her encounters were recalled through flashbacks and dreams. Ultimately, she did have face-to-face conscious encounters. Her untimely death by the flu was a tragic shock for all involved. Anne's case involves many onboard experiences and face-to-face encounters with humanoids. It was her last conscious encounter with a grey that provided the most information. The image of a grey holding up Whitley Strieber's book, with an image of a grey on the cover, was something she'll never forget. She definitely saw the humor in it. For me, this event provides a clue that ETs might be not only watching abductees, but also researchers, and are apparently aware of and are reading the books that are written about them. If true, I hope they enjoy this book. As we began to correspond, Gary, Chapter 15. Gary versus the Greys was a bit wary at first. Sharing his experiences was still new to him. He had told only two people what was happening. He hadn't read anything about UFOs, and had no idea how I would receive his account. Once he realized I was interested, and would not use his real name, he opened up and revealed an incredible series of encounters. Gary has a fantastic sense of humor and was able to describe what happened to him with a wonderful clarity, including not only his experiences, but how he felt about them. He had no idea that I had heard much of what he told me from other people. But he also described events that I've only heard a few times, such as getting in a fist fight with a grey alien. He insisted upon anonymity, but also felt that it was important people know about UFOs. He's a humble, unassuming person, and after interviewing him, I can't help but feel we've become friends. Such things tend to happen in the course of UFO research. I am deeply honored and thankful to have met all the witnesses in this book. These 15 cases, 10 men and 5 women, each involve a person who was taken on board a UFO. As we have seen, many of the cases show incredible similarities, and many of the witnesses react in ways that fit a familiar pattern. Perhaps the most prominent pattern is that an onboard UFO experience is rarely an isolated event. It is usually preceded or followed by close-up UFO sightings and/or face-to-face contact. In most cases, witnesses describe a lifetime of unusual events. Often there are very early childhood encounters. In several cases, parents and grandparents report encounters. The witnesses' children also often have experiences. For several of the witnesses, the encounters are ongoing. I contacted most of the witnesses shortly before sending in the final proofs for this book, and was able to add some new events. I know more are coming. The types of ETs show again that most people see variations of greys. However, reptilians, mantids, human-looking ETs, and strange humanoids also make appearances. Despite relatively minor differences, witnesses universally describe humanoids of some form. Most witnesses believe they are dealing with ETs. 2. Ramon and Ron believe the ETs can be accurately described as angelic or demonic. One witness, Joe, remains undecided. The descriptions of the insides of the UFOs also show a remarkable consistency of detail, with prominent themes such as smooth, rounded walls and unusual lighting. The witnesses provide very similar descriptions of UFO control rooms, control panels, viewing screens, transparent walls, low benches, operating tables, medical equipment, dentist-like chairs, and other details. Three of the witnesses, Ramon, Tim and Gary, report physical altercations with the Greys. Two of the witnesses, Pat and Gary, report being taken to underground bases. Three of the witnesses, Tony, Dolly and Lynette, encountered their own full-grown hybrid children. Two of the witnesses, Joe and Tony, describe past life memories of being an alien. Two, Lynette and Pat, report being healed. At least four, Ramon, Kim, Dolly and Gary, have reason to believe they have been implanted. At least four, Pat, Lynette, Dolly and Gary, report precognitive events. Despite the extensive nature of their experiences, most witnesses are still left with more questions than answers. They don't understand why they've been chosen. They still know little about the ETs, who they are and where they come from. What their experiences do show, however, are the various alien agendas. We see an interest in reproduction and hybridization. There is a medical agenda that includes strange medical experiments, sometimes healing. The ETs seem to be particularly interested in people who have psychic experiences such as premonitions or out-of-body experiences. Or, as we have seen, they awaken and foster such abilities. A number of the witnesses were career military officers, which might be connected to the fact that they're having encounters. Ramon had profound encounters while in the military. Dolly worked for the DOD and had one of her most profound encounters while on the way to an army base where she worked. Kim was a military vet with a lifetime of service. This could, of course, be purely coincidental. The remarkable similarities between all the cases show that this is absolutely a real phenomenon. The differences show just how vast and complicated it really is. For me, the takeaway is that UFO encounter is ultimately still a human experience. It can cause fear and distress or excitement and joy. It can be healing or injurious, positive or negative, or anywhere in between. If you ask 15 people who have been taken on board a UFO, what exactly happened to you? You will get 15 different stories. But as you listen to their stories, you begin to get a glimpse into the alien agenda on our planet. ETs have been here for a very long time. They're still here, and they're not going away. There does seem to be an agenda to show themselves to more and more people. A day will likely come when there is open official contact with extraterrestrials. The disclosure movement also continues to grow in strength. As our government and others move toward a more open and transparent policy with UFOs, as more UFO whistleblowers from within government reveal their own stories, a day of official disclosure will come. While both these days still appear to be years away, one never knows. One simple sighting viewed by a million people could change everything. What happens then? One government whistleblower could provide incontrovertible evidence of UFO reality. What then? It is still my current assessment that we are dealing with extraterrestrials in the classic sense, people like us, but different, from other planets. This, however, is still a theory. The UFO mystery remains an open question. There is much we don't understand about these visitors. Where do they really come from? Why are they here in such large numbers? Why are they so interested in us? What are their future plans with us? Many questions remain. One thing we do know for sure, people will continue to have onboard UFO encounters. About the author. Preston Dennett began investigating UFOs and the paranormal in 1986 when he discovered that his family, friends and co-workers were having dramatic unexplained encounters. Since then, He has interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated a wide variety of paranormal phenomena. He is a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, a ghost hunter, a paranormal researcher, and the author of 26 books and more than 100 articles on UFOs and the paranormal. His articles have appeared in numerous magazines including Fate, Atlantis Rising, MUFON UFO Journal, Nexus, Paranormal Magazine, UFO Magazine, Mysteries Magazine, Ufologist and others. His writing has been translated into several different languages including German, French, Portuguese, Russian, and Icelandic. Several of his books have been Amazon UFO bestsellers. He has appeared on numerous radio and television programs, including Coast to Coast and the History Channel's Deep Sea UFOs and UFO Hunters. His research has been presented in the LA Times, the LA Daily News, the Dallas Morning News and other newspapers. He has taught classes on various paranormal subjects and lectures across the United States. He currently resides in Southern California.